WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively back from the NFL owners meetings. I am appropriately tanned and not well rested, but at least well educated about things in the National Football League and getting back to all sorts of things, including my my wonderful piece every week. The only set piece we do around here is called the Recon. I do it with Don Moeller. It's all brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. We call them Wise Conversations. And of course, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour doing the Ukrainian benefit and the brewery. You and I have been talking about war for a month here, Don. My friend Hugh Sisson, and I know your brother was in the beer industry for a long, long time. His name came up in Moosehead being my first sponsor 30 years ago.
Well, he and Hugh are good buddies.
Yeah, and, you know, so this thing happened, and I had an opening on the Crab Cake Tour. I was going to do it at the Chaucer. I'm not there this week. We're trying to organize a new date with him. He's doing a thing for Kentucky Derby down in Highlandtown. So I said, hey, I'm going to move this thing over to Heavy Seas. And I would say the Ukrainian thing has inspired people all over the planet, right? Like, literally, these images of Mariupol from above, of it just being completely gutted, you know, bombed to death, literally bombed into obliteration, that we're doing something here halfway around the world, drinking beer and toasting and supporting those people in whatever way we can.
Well, Linda and I say nightly, and it is exhausting, right? It's exhausting. And we'll say every night, can you imagine, here we are in Catonsville, waking up every day to see our homes bombed, our churches that we go to bombed, the schools that our children attend bombed,
hospitals with Red Cross,
the hospitals,
right?
The, you know, St. Agnes Hospital down the street, the preschool where, or the after school where my grandchildren go, the restaurants that you and I love, I don't think, if we ever had to wonder what World War II felt like, right, when Hitler was trying to take over the world, we now see it every single night. It is horrific, and, you know, it's hard, as people say, to see an end to this thing. It's just very, very disgusting. But, you know, Nestor, it never fails, and we will get to the NFL meetings, because I have some takeaways and I really want some of your thoughts, because you were down there taking the temperature of the league. That was actually, you know, I make a little list every week of things that I want to throw out and look back in the Recon, and NFL meetings and your visit was number one, because you were right there close and up close and personal. And the next thing we know, Will Smith jumps on the stage and smacks Chris Rock in the face. I'm sure you were not watching. I was thinking of our friends Max Weiss and Alan McCallum. And
by the way, we did a great piece. People loved that piece last week, like on the Oscars. That was your idea. I want to tip the cap to you, because I wouldn't have necessarily have dreamed it up. I think Alan and Max had a great time.
I think we had fun. I think I've gotten a lot of feedback. I mean, you bring on smart people like Alan McCallum and Max Weiss and have them talk about their passion.
My wife's like, how did you host an hour of movie talk when you haven't seen a movie in 15 years? I'm like, well, that was the point. That's what made it good.
But so I text, you know, I was back and forth with them. Linda and I were watching it. And when it first happened, I thought it was a bit. I thought, well, I'm not sure that bit is all that funny. And the next thing I know, you realize it's not a bit, which to me makes, and he is getting some credit for this. I didn't think he got enough immediately. I thought the ability of Chris Rock to stand there, not seem flustered, and continue to present the award, I thought, well, there's a guy who
he's
truly
dealt with hecklers all of his life, though. So this was worse than way worse than a heckle, right? But feeling like I'm going to move on. You know, I'm an actor. We had a bad scene. He had a move on, right, moment in that. And I saw it. My story is I was drinking with coaches and owners and stuff at the Breakers, and I walked out at 11:45 at night to get my Uber back to where I was staying. And as I was waiting for my Uber, I finally looked at my phone and I played the video. And the kid that's the bellhop, this is midnight at the Breakers, right? So you full uniform, the kid's out in the front. He's like, "That's some shit, ain't it?" And I'm like, well, what am I? I'm trying to process it. I had two or three drinks. I'm just going through my timeline. I'm at the NFL owners meeting, so I'm much more interested in that than I am anything else. And I was trying to process it. And then I went back to my room and my buddy that I was staying with, we were talking about it a little bit because it was late. It was, after midnight. And I thought about it and I thought a couple things. First off, my wife was bald a couple times. And she remembers vividly being really, really sick. And I took her up to Hershey to see Bruce Springsteen because we thought she might die, right? So she was feeling well enough to go. It was before her first transplant and her hair was growing back. And she was just out and didn't care and had a mask on and had a port in her chest with a ball that would put her medicine in her. And she had to take her medicine in a refrigerated thing and put it in at 7 p.m. before the show. We wound up not even going into the show because she wasn't well enough to be around people. But we sat in the parking lot and we watched Bruce on the screen from the parking lot for an hour and she fell asleep like an angel in the car, and I drove her home at 9:30. But that night, we were out in the parking lot, and a drunk a-hole said some flippant stuff to her about bald and a mask.
Now, yeah, but people, listen.
Now, now that sort of thing that I know the emotion that I have telling that story, and I know the emotion I have. There's another media member in town who sent disparaging things on Christmas Eve about my wife. And if he'd have been in front of me, he'd have been smacked or worse. And I've said to people, this is why I don't own a gun, because I can get really mad. And people have wronged me. And wronging my wife, a different level. It just there's a different yeah. – you can see the swallow in me that if my wife had been home crying about being bald and – she did a little, but not a, my wife wasn't upset about being bald. My wife was upset about how she felt. But the bald part of this, I remember this incident with this redneck up in Hershey, who came by, and I'm protective of my wife. And I'll never forget this media clown in the market for wishing ill will upon my wife when my wife was dying, that a smack wouldn't have been good enough. So when I think of these issues and I think if Will Smith has watched his wife cry all night from being bald and she's one of the most famous women in the world and he's one of the most famous men in the world and someone poked it at her baldness, I might lose my shit, Don. I mean, I had to think about it. I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, I might. You can't, but I might have. And yeah. I have been bullied. I'm in the process of being bullied right now, and I don't handle that well. I had a moment. I'm not saying it was right. I'm not saying I would have done it. I'm just saying I understand it. And if that doesn't make people understand it, then okay, then they've never been me. That's all.
Yes. No, there are so many layers. In no way do I condone it at all. Violence has no place in what we do in the United States of America, and that's on many, many levels, from guns on down. We just can't have the violence. Was the joke insensitive? Maybe, maybe not. I guess the maybe, maybe not falls into, if Chris Rock knew, I have no idea.
Well, if there's a personal issue to begin with, right? So there are people I have personal issues with. You could make a joke about my wife's ball. This we'd have no problem because we love each other and we're friends. And that's part of our – we all have walls and barriers and – and boundaries, really. I talk a lot about that with my dear friend, Dr. Steve at Elliott Chiropractic Life, boundaries, like where the boundary is. And maybe that was a joke that if somebody he didn't have a personal thing with told the joke, another comedian tells the joke, maybe it's funny. Maybe it was personal to him. Maybe he felt like, oh, you think you're going to get away with that as a joke? No bueno. So I don't know the personal thing, but I correct. Sense the anger. And I've been angry. And I've been angry at people making bald jokes about my wife and worse.
Listen,
And I think you can tell it never goes away. The anger for being slighted in that way is brutal when you see your wife bald and crying.
Sure.
Which I've done.
No doubt. And here's the really sad part is that by all accounts, again, don't know, you just know what you read, what publicists put out. But Will Smith's public image been pretty darn positive, pretty squeaky clean. I mean, you got the little weird thing with the open marriage, to each his own. Who the heck knows what that means? But he's a pretty squeaky guy who's done good work, who's a solid actor. This should have been his moment to shine. And I am sure that for months, if not years, this moment will haunt him. The only thing, and I'm hesitant to say this because people will think I'm apologizing for Will Smith.
Well, you're a professional crisis manager, so if he were in front of you as a client, you would have advice for him.
Well, right? He did. I mean, his team did the right thing the next day.
But his lawyer sending out an email and an Instagram. That's the right. I don't know. That's what you would tell him to do. That's what Rob Weinhold. That's what Kevin Byrne.
Sure.
You know.
Well,
not only that.
Normally, good communications and PR. One of the things I've always argued when I speak to students and speak to classes at Towson University about communications, the right thing is normally turns out to be good communication strategy as well. So, for example, put all of the communication optics aside. The right thing to do is to apologize. Now,
Rock owe his wife an apology for a joke that was untoward?
I'd have to think that through.
Chris Rock was a right guy at that moment when Will Smith is yelling at him after smacking him,
I think
Chris Rock could say, you know what? I'm up here making a joke, Will, and I apologize in front of the world to your wife right now. Maybe that was insensitive.
There's two answers to that.
Chris Rock could have done then. It's something he could do now. Right. It's something that would he clearly crossed the line with Will Smith. I hate to take Will Smith's side as the aggressor. I just have been there, and I know there's. We all have a boundary, and
yeah, you can't allow that to bubble over to smacking people. Now, here's the thing.
And I agree with that too.
Here's the thing.
Fully.
As far as Rock goes, if Rock knew that Jada Pinkett Smith had a skin condition.
And she did. He knew that. That's widely known.
I don't know that. I don't know that I knew that. I mean, and I read a fair amount about pop.
But he knew that. When he's making a Propecia joke about her, he knew it.
If he knew. Well, he didn't make a joke about her condition. He made a joke about her haircut. So if he thought that she truly was simply making a stylistic.
Well, if he woke up on Monday and didn't know she had Propecia, then he should be vehemently apologizing. Different.
No. You're not hearing me. I'm talking about at the moment. So on Monday, when he realized that she did have a hair condition, then I think his appropriate response would have been, hey, look, had I known, I thought I was commenting on a stylistic choice. Clearly, had I known that Jada had a condition that necessitated her baldness, I wouldn't have gone there. That's a mistake. I apologize to Jada. Apologize to Will. My point is that apologies, while often, I mean, certainly crafted by his PR team, also just the right thing to do. We become better people when we apologize. And
No. We become better people when we apologize and mean it.
Well, of course. This is where you go.
People come to me and tell me to go to Peter Angelos and apologize. I'm not sorry for anything.
Please don't go there.
But if you're not sorry, you shouldn't apologize.
Please don't bring that part up, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact of course you should mean it. I can't look into, and I refuse to, and I won't be that cynical guy who says that Will Smith didn't mean it. I don't know that. I will take him at his word that when he said the following day, I apologize to Chris and the Academy. Yeah. Now, Will should have done it. The reaction to Will would have been very, very different had when he won his award, had he been able to get up and say, look, I really screwed up. And I want to say to my friend, Chris Rock, I really apologize. I made it about me. It's not about me. It was a terrible mistake. It was a terrible example. I apologize to Chris and to the Academy and to my parents who I really let down tonight. It would have been a totally different. He wasn't able emotionally at that point.
Well, he had handlers like you in his ear. They all came. He had Denzel Washington in his ear. I mean,
right.
He had,
and
he
I'm sure Denzel and Tyler Perry were trying to tell him that. But it would be like me trying to talk you off the ledge about the Orioles. So,
well, there is a crisis management part of it that I understand. You know, I have been attempted to be handled by you and others where I'm just like, I'm not going to say that because I don't believe that. And that's that. And
well, that's a different, like, yeah, that's
but,
a different.
Or I feel the way I feel because of the way I've been treated. And there's no fake apology that's going to win me over. Right.
Yeah.
So there's the other thing of like, if the apology is given, it's accepted when it's accepted with an open heart and a true apology. So I think there's lessons to be learned here all the way around, right? Like the whole world was watching. Everybody was talking about it. Because it is such a, you mess with my bald wife with a joke and we already had a thing. And,
well,
and you're going to do it in
front
of the whole
world?
Written. On my
there's
night? That's not going to fly, right?
I've really been interested in the reaction of women who really found that caveman approach pretty offensive. And I've read quite a bit about it now because I want to be sensitive to that point of view. And more than a handful of women have said, please stop with the caveman. I need my big, strong husband to protect me, and that it perpetuates.
Yeah, that's
all
an awfully liberal view until you're in the parking lot at Hershey and some guy's making fun
all
of your
kinds
wife.
Of bad.
Yeah,
bad,
until
bad
that happens,
yeah.
It's happened.
All
to me,
kinds
God.
Of bad.
So, my wife still remembers it, still talks. She'll talk about it to the day she dies, even though it was one of those, it's over, let it go. But like, I'll never forget it. And I didn't go after and beat the shit out of the guy. He was drunk. I let him walk, but it didn't stop hurting my wife. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
no, I understand. I understand the personal hurt. And that's what makes it. Now, the last thing I'll
and
say.
And that's all I could think about, that Will Smith has watched his wife cry herself to sleep about this issue.
Yes.
And to have it brought up would be a bad, bad thing. Just
you
a really, really bad
smack,
thing.
You it's still can't
the
smack people.
Yeah, fair
you
enough.
Still can't.
Fair enough.
Still can't touch people physically. Now, in Will Smith's case, we're talking about multi-millions, if not billions, of dollars of repair. I read an article this morning that said he's not toxic yet, but how this plays out will be important. It wasn't good.
Well, there's going to come a time where there's a camera in front of him the next time, right?
And
he's going to be all coached up by 10 guys like you. And
right.
We'll see
and
how that goes.
It was not good. That it's come out that he was asked to leave and refused also. So made some mistakes.
So if he was asked to leave and then they gave him the award, what would happen then?
Right. Well, I think you
have already won the award. They're not going to take the award away from him. I guess not.
No, he hadn't won it at that point.
Right. But if he left an hour later, they give the award. He's not
there.
Well,
he would
he's
not have
the winner.
Been there. Denzel would have gotten up and accepted.
And I'm sure Denzel would have said, he's not here, but he apologizes because that's what he has to do. Because
I'm sure Denzel will serve as the older
brother. We talked about this because we really disagree. I mean, not disagree, but I was up late thinking about it because I've had these incidents with my wife.
You and I, one of the themes that has evolved on the recon, and I want to get to the NFL meetings because time is short.
You probably don't want to get to the NFL meetings.
I do. One of the things that's different, everybody's different, is you personalize things. And I just know now.
My brand, though.
Having been around for decades, for better or worse, it is really hard for me to maintain anger or be angry or when slighted. It just doesn't work for me. I don't know why that is. I've always been able to say, it is what it is. We'll move on. That is not easy for everyone. I'm not even saying it's right. It's certainly not easy for you. It's something that's very, very difficult.
When people try to harm you irreparably, there's a different thing than making fun of you or.
But I had that. I mean, we've all had that.
But when people try to wreck your business or go at your family, there's a boundary between you don't like my voice, you don't like my thoughts on the Orioles, you think I suck, you think I'm a public figure 30 years. There's different when you're after my wife or you're out to hurt my family or hurt my business, which, you know, the girl 1057 had a lawsuit, like all of those kind of people that are trying to end your career and your life and your marriage. And like, there's a boundary there that would force a man to smack another man. Don't cross that boundary. Don't insult my bald wife and probably we won't have a problem, you know? So that would be where I would stand on it. Now, Hollywood joking stage at an event that's basically a roast. You know what I mean? It was a different kind of an environment.
And I thought, Nestor, another error, but under those rules, Don Rickles would have been punched out every night, right? Making fun
correct.
Of some way.
Oh, correct. Yeah.
So anyway, let's move
on. Who's the British guy that always insults everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. Ricky Gervais. Yeah. Often very tasteless. Very, very tasteless.
And sometimes funny, but sometimes like I had Mickey Coachella on last week and we talked before the incident, right? And Mickey, the first thing Mickey said is, I'm worried about comedy. I'm worried that like you walk into a place and everybody's offended by everything. You can't make a joke anymore. And he said that that's not good. And now all of a sudden we got people getting slapped for bald jokes at a roast, like literally it's a roast. And I don't know where that line is. That would make me go, oh, and you know what Mickey said? Mickey said, and this was a really insightful thing from Mickey, who did this. He said, you'll laugh if you're in your car alone. If you're looking over your shoulder to see if they're black people, white people, women, men, this, that, like if you're looking at being judged for laughing, then you can't do that joke anymore. And he said, the whole idea of live comedy is that there are people and making fun of the guy's wife. That was Don Rickles' thing. That was Andrew Dice Clay. Right. You know, the wife in the front row. My wife and I went to see Joe Rogan 15 years ago in Phoenix. He did our show. And he had a show in Phoenix. And he gave – well, my wife was a very beautiful woman, still is, seats in the front row. And he was on to my wife half the night. You know, like it's part of the gig when you sing the comedy thing, right?
Again, wouldn't punch people. Rogan might be at the top of my list if I wanted
to. No, I'm just saying in a general sense, this was comedy
forever. In terms of
forever.
People I'd like to punch, Joe Rogan.
Well, Mickey and I talked about this and about where the boundaries are for a comedian. I mean, half of Mickey's thing is, oh, you're with him? You know what I mean? Like that's been comedy from the beginning is – you know, you're not good enough for your wife is part of the shtick in the front row of every piece, literally, right? Anyway, you want to talk football. What do you want to know?
I just you were down at the NFL meetings for a few days. You know, obviously we talk about Steve's press conference, which I thought was just amazing.
It wasn't a press conference. It was a gathering of selected reporters. I want to make that really clear.
Gathering of selective reporters, but whatever, you know, Steve.
I wasn't a part of it. So to be clear, I didn't ask any questions. I was not given that. I was not afforded availability with the owner of the team, even though I was 50 feet away. So I don't have, I had no questions. I heard the answer. So I only have reaction to the answer.
Well, I mean, you were not there. You mean?
I was not allowed to speak to the owner. I'll just leave it at
that. No, I didn't ask you that. Were you in the room?
No. No. I was.
I don't know what the setup was.
Steve was taken out privately to the beach for people who were tapped on the shoulder. I don't even really know who was there other than Jameson and Jeff because they tweeted. They tweeted it. I think Jonas was there, but I'm not. I know I wasn't there. I was uninvited. I was not allowed to ask the owner questions. That's the fact. That's a fact. So again, what the owner said, we can stay on point with. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. No. I just say I think Steve does. I think what comes across, and I think I think I shared this on social media. I said, compared to what I see, I don't know all of the owners. I don't follow them closely, but I'm pretty confident we have one of the best. And I think Steve's honesty is really refreshing. You know,
it's scary for his PR people because his candor is his candor, and that's that. And it makes me really like Steve. So, you know, I have no issue with Steve. Steve didn't make the decision to not have me ask Steve questions. So, but Steve has no fear of me or anybody or anything or the truth. And the truth is that Deshaun Watson's deal and his partner in the league, Jimmy Haslam, has just upped the ante for his quarterback by upwards of $200 million for guaranteed money. I mean, the guaranteed money they have in front of Lamar was appropriate. 75 to 80 million guaranteed. That's pretty much two seasons of money up front. We amortize it over 5 years. I mean, look at you. What are your wheels going to be when you're 30, kid? And you know, I think they saw this for Lamar as some sort of 5-year, $230 million deal, but they saw it with $84 million of guaranteed money, not $230 million. So therein lies the $160 million of guaranteed money that Steve is like, that's not the way we do it in our league. And Steve speaking out about it was Steve being the flippant one to say, okay, I'll take leadership on this. We got guys in the room acting rogue.
Well, I also thought, and you've written about it over the years extensively, and I still believe the Raven model is the way to go in terms of the organization. Like when Bisciotti said, "Don't speak to Lamar, that's Eric's job." And you wrote about this all the way back in Purple Rain 1. That there's this structure that the Ravens have in place that I think is just good and a solid management approach to any organization. Now,
well, they have stability because they have really competent people, right? So, and I watch this around the league every year, every Super Bowl, every combine, where there's 9 new coaches, 10 now, right? Because Bruce Arians stepped down in the middle of the night, right? So there's 10 new
coaches.
Did you
see that coming?
No, I saw Bruce Arians walk through the lobby a day.
I was going to say, was there any buzz of that down there?
None. And apparently Brady knew and everybody sort of knew. That's a really weirdly orchestrated thing that Arians would sit at a press conference as the head coach and then leave at the end. But it sounded to me, and again, the PRB-ish, you know, that gets thrown out. It just be honest. If you woke up on the wrong side of the bed and left, but it sounds to me like this was more orchestrated than we realize in the early going. You know, he's old. I'll tell you this: the tip of the cap for him is to say the quotes that he had, which were, "Hey, I don't want the organization to go naked looking for a coach, and Todd Bowles to not have a job next year. Todd Bowles should have a job, and this will help him keep the job because I'm lame duck. I'm leaving next year anyway, so I'll just move over here." And that's who Bruce is. I mean, anybody knows Bruce knows that.
Yeah. I think, Nestor, I wonder if it also reflects. And I know you spoke with John down there, and you spoke with Eric. And I'm very pleased that John, some of your friends, particularly on social media, are not happy. I love the fact that we extended John 3 years through 2025. I'm a big stability guy. I would never fire the Tomlins, the Carrolls, the Shanahans, these guys who can once you find someone who can coach in the National Football League, they're really hard to find. And if you don't think so, You're not paying attention.
Well, I walked around the room. The first day was the breakfast with Harbaugh. I did attend that event, right? It's not a breakfast anymore. It's a mini presser. I mean, the league has done everything from a PR standpoint to screw things up. I mean, every reporter feels screwed. They're getting screwed. Every piece of access has shrunk. Anybody that's been around this a period of time looks at it and says, you're either incompetent or you just want us to go away. And maybe, and as some people said, both, because the press conference was terrible. John sat down and his first words are, this is terrible. There were 16 press conferences in one room, all with podiums and mics. It was a cacophony of noise. It looked really odd. McDermott got up and moved. Well, what's odd is it was 81 degrees. And it was a beautiful morning out on the veranda where there was giant space and tables that were already set up. So much so that me and Pete Prisco said, hey, maybe they're having this event outside. Wouldn't that be nice? Just terrible, Don. I don't want to tell you. I've been doing this all my life. It was terrible. So these press conferences were where they were. The AFC was Monday, and I'm with John, and it's only 30 minutes to begin with. And John's so good in this environment, right? Like when and I told him that at dinner on Monday night, I said, you're so good at not doing sound bites in season. You know, your sphincter's this tight. You're all like, it's 10 second answers. You don't want to hear about it. Like, it's all of that game time stuff. This time of year, when you're talking about special teams and philosophy and gunners and wedges and like kickers and things and quarterbacks and offense and overtime and timeouts and like 2 points and all and analytics, all of those longer conversations, John's so smart and so well-read and knows this stuff in his sleep, but never wants to talk about it once the whistle blows in August. They've condensed all of that. And on Tuesday, I came back for the NFC. Don, all my friends are gone from the league, right? Like I knew at one point I went to these owners meetings, Jack Del Rio, Ken Wisenhunt, Rex Ryan, Jim Schwartz, Mike Pettine, Brian Billy, just go down the list of Jack Del Rio, all of those guys I knew. So I'd walk into the room and there'd be six head coaches on the AFC. I knew Mike Zimmer really well. So like I knew all of these people. Now I'm getting to be the old guy at class, right?
Sure.
And I walk in and I'm like, well, I know Andy Reid a little, and I know Mike Tomlin a lot, and I wound up hanging out with him most of the night on Monday. But most of these guys are new to me. And Aaron Wilson came up to me at the party, and he said, hey, NFC press conference tomorrow. Which coach are you going to sit and listen to? And I'm like, well, it used to be an hour. You used to be able to go table to table. You used to be able to, you know, have your coffee and walk around the room and listen in a little bit on John Gruden or listen in a little bit on whomever. And he said he was going to listen to Matt LaFleur. And I'm like, well, you're all into that Aaron Rodgers, and that's his business, right? And I'm like, you know what I decided to do? I came and I put my stuff down at the Vikings table because I'm friendly with their management team. And I began to walk around the room, and I thought, all right, who would I hire? Well, you know, I don't know any of these guys. Nick Sirianni, Matt Rhule, Kevin O'Connell. If any of these people sat next to you in a plane, would you know them?
Nope.
So I'm getting like Dennis Allen is the coach of so there's all these names. There are names I'm not even familiar with, right? And Sean McVay's holding court for Hollywood over here. And I walked the room, and Ron Rivera was there. So I'm walking the room and I'm listening in, and I was impressed by two people, and I tweeted about this. Brian Daboll of the New York Giants caught my attention, and caught my attention in the way you caught my attention the day I met you. He was teaching. He was almost like a school teacher in the way he was talking to people. And a lot of the jaded coaches that have been around a while, they're giving sound bites. They've been coached up by a guy like you and Kevin Byrne for 20 years on how to get in and out of answers in 12 seconds and deflect everything and say nothing, offer nothing. They want to offer nothing. And then there's Kevin O'Connell, who sits down, who was a third string quarterback for years in the league and never really made it as a quarterback. He's from San Diego State, threw a couple of passes as Tom Brady's understudy, aspired as a quarterback coach through the Redskins. He's 36 years old. He's younger than my son. So he's sitting, he does his thing. And I found myself like, I want to talk to that guy more. If I had to pull one guy out of the room and have breakfast with the guy and interview him. So I go out to the courtyard where Matt LaFleur pulled everybody out. Matt LaFleur stopped the press conference 2 minutes in and said, "No bueno. Stop everything. Grab all of your equipment. We're going to go outside and I'm going to give you time to set up and I'm going to stay 15. I'm not in a hurry. I'm going to stay with you, but we're going to do this the right way." So Matt LaFleur wins on the leadership points.
Sure.
If Harbaugh should have done, McDermott did it. McDermott just said, "This sucks. I'm not being a part of this. We're going to do it where you guys get value." And they were announcing their stadium that day. The Bills were, right? So,
right,
you know,
right.
The Pegulas were everywhere doing all that. Mark Davis was running around. So, Kevin O'Connell impressed me, and I'll leave you with this because I know we're going to do some golf and do some Masters here this week as well as we get ready for that. I sat down for breakfast, and he sat down with me. He picked up his food, sat down, and it was just four of us at the table. The whole thing had broken up. Nobody knows who the hell he is. He's not famous. He's just right. A good-looking young guy. He was wearing purple, so I was giving him a hard time about wearing purple. And he sat down, and the minute he sat down, he sort of had seen me sitting there. I didn't ask him any questions. He sat down. I said, "Hey, man, I'm going to pay you a compliment. It's my 20th owner's meetings. I've been to all of these." I said, "Brian Billick's my partner. I've got friends all through the league." I said, "I'd hire you."
There you go.
And he sat down with me for 30 minutes. And you know what? After talking to him for 30 minutes, I can't wait to talk to him again. You know what I mean? And to me, these are the little things you find. I'm going to root for that guy. Like, I'm pulling for that guy. When I see him down by 3 points on NFL 4 o'clock game and we're on bye week, I'm going to be a Viking fan, you know, because he won me over with his earnestness. And I said to him, I gave him a little PR advice because his PR director was nearby, because his PR director was doing what you used to do with Kevin Kamen. It's just, how did we do? Probably should couch that a little different. Maybe say, so he's with this guy. And I said to him, "I'm going to pay you the highest compliment." I walked around the room. Everybody did sound bites. And I said that's where Brian Billick was so good. Brian never cared. That's where Steve Bisciotti is so good, because you're getting something authentic. You're getting something from the soul. And I said to him, "You aren't good at press conferences yet. Don't ever get good at them." I said, "Because what you did, what I just saw you do, was you're a teacher. You're Marvin would always say this. Marvin would say, "I'm a teacher." And this is the part for your soul. I said, I sat there, and if you think of the reporters, not as guys that are there to gotcha, but just guys that are there to learn, you can hold court, be a teacher, and you'll be beloved in that way. And you'll always be somebody people can go to and be insightful, because most people here don't want to be insightful. They're being trained to not be insightful. And I thought he was. So there you have it. From the star of the press conference for me was the Vikings head coach. So have at it.
Outstanding, outstanding report. Are you more or less optimistic about the upcoming Raven year, having been down there and talked to Eric and John and Steve? Are you more optimistic or less optimistic?
I was really optimistic last year, and all the injuries happened. And it's funny, you know, when I get together with John privately, he wears this so, I mean, John's full all in, you know, like they gave him a lot of money and like all that, but John doesn't, when John comes up to me, he wants to talk about his team. He wants to talk about the losses. Like, literally, he leads with we lost six games in a row at the end, and he's, you know, his butt's red about that. And he doesn't like that. And none of them like that. And that's good. That's good. But they were good enough last year. It's embarrassing to them that they lost, but they look at it and say, "We feel like we built it well. We feel like we're good at this." Now, I don't know how Ronnie Stanley's foot's going to hold up.
Right.
I don't know how Marcus Peters is going to come back.
Whether J.K. Dobbins and the Gus Bus are back.
Yeah, listen, I mean, they need all of that to happen. They need good fortune.
Yeah, that passion that you just talked about that John brings to it every day. I will never forget, I was having lunch with our friend Dick Cass, who's retiring after a wonderful career with the Ravens. As you know, one of my very favorite people on the planet.
Sashi Brown saw plenty of me, and I assured he'd be seeing plenty more.
There you go. And Dick said to me, this was, I think, after they missed the playoffs, the crazy Cincinnati play, 4th-and-14 or whatever it was. And Dick, you could just see it almost in the way you describe Harbaugh. As we were having lunch, he goes, "Don, we're embarrassed as an organization if we don't succeed. And you just got that. It was like, this was real. This wasn't any phony. This was like, we work hard. We think we're good at what we do. And we're embarrassed if it doesn't work
out. Well, I hang with Mike Tomlin at the pool, and Mike is not shy. We've been kicking your ass six times. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have any, you know, I mean, and that's the way the league is. The league is, you know, you want to win. You want to win. There was a big gaggle around Sean McVay, and there's a lot of, you know, heat internally about giving away draft picks and spending money. And,
they won a Super Bowl doing it
a different way, right?
We'll talk about the whole new model. And when we come back next week, because we're going to jump out and talk with ESPN, specialist about the Masters. When we come back next week, Nestor, who knew second base has been in the wrong location for 135 years? Think about that. That's next week.
Recon. Now he's getting ready for opening day. Don Mohler, former Baltimore County executive Don Mohler joining us here. All of our Wise Conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. By the way, I found my Cole roofing mug, so I just want to give a shout out to Billy Cole. This has been in a box buried for the last 65 days. It's back. And I will continue to drink my Royal Farms coffee out of it. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is on the road. We're going to be at Greenmount Station later in the month. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh later in the month. We're going to be at Conrad's Crabs later in the month, getting some big fat crabs and some crab cakes. And we're going to be with our friends at Cooper's and the Chow Hound, as well as our friend Hugh Sisson from Heavy Seas Brewery on April 1st. And it's no joke what we're doing for the good people of Ukraine and Pravda Brewery. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.